Welcome again to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, a co-host, and with me today is Matt Smith and David Hulley, who should be joining me shortly. In this episode, we'll be previewing the upcoming match for Fulham against Ipswich Town, and I couldn't even say Ipswich Town. I don't know what is going on with me, at Craven Cottage tomorrow. Before that, we'll have another segment of the Cottage Talk Controversy Roundtable, which includes us debating questions I put on the Cottage Talk Facebook page for the fans to comment on. And today we have two very interesting topics to break down. Lastly, we'll have a bonus topic for the roundtable sent by a supporter for us to debate as well. Before we do anything else, I have to welcome one of my co-hosts, which is Mr. Smith, Mr. Matt Smith. Thank you for joining me, my friend.
Hey, Russ. How are you doing, man? It's been a while since I've kind of dropped off the face of the earth. Sorry, work's been a little bit crazy, but it's good to be back.
It's good to have you back, my friend. It's good to have you back. And, and again, just a little heads up, David actually was trying to message me to let me know that he had a problem getting back home, some issues traffic-wise, so he should be joining us shortly at some point. But for right now, it'll just be you and I, my friend. And listen, it has been a long time, so while we wait for David, let me just get your thoughts. Since the last time you've been on, much has gone on. I just want to get your overall thoughts, what has been going on with Fulham, say for the past month.
Well, it seems as if we've plateaued at best and regressed at worst. I read a really good article on Facebook today that somebody had broken down statistically how we've kind of just regressed in our play and how, you know, we were out shooting teams at the beginning of the season. They broke it down in 5-game segments, and now teams are now out shooting us by, you know, exponentially. So it is a little bit troubling. I think that we've lost a little bit of our creativity. I feel like, it's interesting that, we had a lot of goal-scoring opportunities and we were a little bit more exciting footballing side than we are now, over the past month. And so it's been a little troubling, but, you know, I feel like we're still going to be okay. I don't think relegation is, you know, we're not incredibly comfortable, but I think relegation is not really reality for us right now.
Okay, very good take there, Matt. And listen, one of the reasons why I wanted to ask you about this, because again, Fulham have been going up and down, and one of the theories I have is, again, I'm used to this from, I guess you could say, American sports, with a complete rebuild. This is a very young side, and again, we're going to be playing an interview done earlier with the Fulham manager, Kit Simons, by Sarah Brooks, and he's going to talk about the young side. When you see a team not able to put two great halves together, is that really just an indication of lack of experience and possibly being a young side? I'm curious your thoughts as a coach when you see this constantly. I mean, this is a constant theme throughout the season, one good half and one bad half, Matt.
Yeah, it definitely seems like our only consistency is that we're inconsistent.
Right.
You know, from half to half, game to game. And, as a manager, it's got to be very frustrating and very annoying that, that kind of stuff happens. I think it also, another thing that lends itself is that Kit's a young manager, and he's still trying to figure out how to get the team to play consistently. And so I think when you put in a young team, in terms of his career, a young manager, I think that's really what lends itself to being inconsistent, is he hasn't really found a way to get the players to play consistently, and they're young players looking for guidance right now. I think they're really looking for something to kind of spur them on to show them how to be consistent. And, you know, we do have some players that I think are very consistent. Scott Parker is the first one that comes to mind. Who you know what you're going to get from Scott Parker, but you know you hate that we only have, it seems like we only have one of those players, and so when you're surrounded with nothing but you kind of hope that maybe they'll get it one day, but that is troubling.
It is troubling, Matt, and it's funny because again, this is what I'm seeing, and I'm glad that you brought on this combination, because I actually think it's a combination of both. You're dealing with a new manager that's really learning on the ropes, and you're dealing with a young side. So the combination, I think, is why we're seeing 2 steps forward, 3 steps back. And, I guess we're going to have to see how this whole thing plays out. But I was kind of expecting that when we decided to bring on Kit and then also have this young squad. I had a funny feeling this is the way it's going to turn out. So I'm not shocked by it, but I'm also, I guess you could say, you know, not disappointed, but you know, again, I want to see better. You know, I want to see consistency. And you just nailed it. What we are seeing is a side that's consistently inconsistent. You know, that's the only way to put it. But hopefully by the end of the season, he will grow into the role as a manager, see what works and what doesn't work, and the players will grow together as a team. And I think, you know, again, what we're seeing, I think, Matt, is growing pains. I think that's the best way to say it, growing pains. Would that be a great way to look at this?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really good way to put it, is we're growing physically. I think the young kids are growing physically, and then metaphorically, I think we're growing as a unit. And so I think that is a good way to put it.
Okay, fantastic. All right, looks like our other guest is on the line, so I'm going to bring him on. David, how you doing, my friend?
Hi, don't you hate buses? I mean, they're one of my pet hates as well after Hull City. Just, one just stopped in the middle of the road and was blocking traffic both ways, so I had to do a massive detour to get in anyway. But I just listened to what you were saying there, and unfortunately for me, I don't know about inconsistent or whatever you said. At the moment, we've been a bit too consistent, which is my worry, because of course, we've got into this kind of trend of not really scoring many goals, not having many shots on target, and conceding too many goals. So for me, it's a bit too consistent. I'd rather we were more inconsistent, at least had a few games where we thrashed a few people, then it would be easier to take these results. But anyway, glad to be here. And Matt, great to have you on and speak to you again. It's quite a long time, isn't it?
Yeah, it has been a while. It's been since just before Christmas, I guess.
Yeah, well, I hope you're coming over soon, and hope you can put up with another piri piri chicken as well.
Oh, absolutely, I could do with. I think I've been working on my spice tolerance, I guess you could say.
That means you're moving up from the mild to the medium, then.
Oh, absolutely not.
All right. Good stuff. All right, guys, let's get going. And I'm going to start with a section I call the Cottage Talk Controversy Roundtable. And, guys, I put up two questions on the Cottage Talk Facebook page for the fans to comment on. We're going to be going through it, and also have a bonus topic that a fan actually sent me. So we're going to go through this. Then afterwards, David, I was mentioning this at the top of the show. I don't know if you got a chance to watch Kit's interview with Sarah, but I found this one actually, believe it or not, very interesting. I'm going to play that a little bit later, and that's going to set up our preview of the upcoming match. I think you'll get something out of it if you have not seen it yet. I will definitely play it. But let's start here. And Matt, I'll start with you. I put up two questions. This is the first question that I asked. Which away ground has been your favorite as a Fulham supporter, and why? And I know that you've been to your share of away grounds, Matt. So what would be yours?
Yeah, we have. Heather and I have been lucky enough to be over for a number of away games. We enjoy going to see them away. But one, it's a little bit off the radar a little bit. The one that I picked is Pride Park in Derby County's ground.
Okay.
And the reason is because it's more of a memory for me than it was the ground, actually. We went to go see Fulham play there in March 2008, and even though we gave up a late equalizer, I think in the 80th minute, it was kind of the start of the Great Escape. And so, basically, from that game until the end of the season, we only dropped, I think, 6 points. I think we picked up 12 points in our last six games to stay up. With, you know, obviously, ending with that crazy match at Portsmouth, and so. You know, that's one reason I'll never forget forget that away ground, is because that was kind of the kickstart to the Great Escape.
Very good one. Was there another ground in your time of going with Heather that stands out to you besides Pride Park?
Yeah, you know, Highbury. I'm sorry, not Highbury. Emirates. The Emirates is always that's a good one. We actually saw a 0-0 draw there. You know, that one always kind of sticks out in my mind. You know, and obviously Brighton, you know, having just recently gone to Brighton when David was able to get us his tickets was fantastic. That helped, that the result was fantastic, but it actually, Brighton's ground is very nice. new stadium. And so those two are the ones, the other ones that might stand out for me.
Okay, fantastic. David, you've been to a ton. Which one stands out for you the most?
Well, I've actually been to all of them. That's the problem, and it's really hard to remember. But if I have to think of grounds, I'm trying to think of the old traditional grounds more, because although the new grounds are great with facilities and the view, they do kind of a bit blur into one. A lot of them are built on the same kind of blueprint and everything. And, I mean, it's true you get an excellent view of all these grounds, whichever one you go to, but I was trying to think of my favourite older-style ground. I mean, I used to like the away end at Brentford even, because they used to have quite a good little away end there. You had a great view standing up. In terms of a performance, I mean, I was at Pride Park that day as well, but that wasn't obviously it was a disappointment for me, because I thought we could win that one because Derby were awful that year. But if it had to come from then, it would have to be obviously the Etihad, because from that being there to witness that 3-2 comeback from being 2-0 down at half time. So in terms of modern era, that would probably be my favourite, although I suppose you could also say the Reading match of a couple of weeks before that, which was our first away win, I think. So that was brilliant. But out of the older grounds, I don't know. They all kind of have special memories in a different way for me. I mean, I was at Carlisle the day we won 2-1, the day Rodney McAree put the ball in the Carlisle net. And, you know, you can't go much further away than that, really, to see Fulham play, not in the UK anyway, or in England anyway. So that was a fantastic one. I mean, some of these old grounds used to have great, really great views. And then, I don't know, I remember, for example, Doncaster used to have a brilliant view from the away end. You could stand at the top and you look backwards over the racecourse and the airport. And then suddenly they hemmed you all in with massive, great security fences, and it was horrible. There's just so many for me. It's just too hard to pick. I mean, perhaps when we listen to some of the comments, it might jog my memory. But, you know, I think it's for me, it's more about, I suppose, the experience of the trip there than the actual ground or the facilities itself, because obviously a good result or a good experience is going to, you know, make it much more favorable, isn't it?
Yeah, no, definitely. And for me personally, I've only been to one full match, you know this, and it was actually two now. One was a friendly, but for me it was the Reading match, and that to me was very special for obvious reasons. And you know, again, it'll always be a special place for me, because it'll be the first place that I've ever seen Fulham live. So that stands out to me. And guys, I just want to give you an update in case you're wondering, because I started getting messages about an hour ago about Blog Talk Radio that there were some issues with the Cottage Talk page. I actually called customer service, and they told me that they were having some issues with updates. And apparently, people that are listening to us live are not hearing us well. They're actually hearing two Davids, I guess, as what I'm being told, David, which is kind of scary, two Davids. So hopefully our recording of this comes out better. But anyone listening live, I'm sorry. Obviously, blogtalkradio.com is having some issues. And I was told that they were worked out before the show began, but obviously not. So I apologize to anyone listening live. And after we're done, guys, because it sounds fine for me, I'll double-check to see how this show comes out. But I apologize to anyone listening live. All right.
Fitting.
I am going
it's
to...
Fitting. It's fitting on Friday the 13th that David sounds possessed.
Yes, it's a very good one. Very good one there, Matt. Absolutely. David possessed. Yeah, that's a good one. Okay, let me see what we got here. On the Cottage Talk Facebook page, we only have a few, which is good. Liam Burns said, I liked Underhill, the old Barnett Ground, proper club. I also like Molyneux more because I have an excuse to go and see my mates from up there, though. Ray Conroy wrote, Carroll Road, never seen us lose there. That's a good reason. Max Cohen, has to be Emirates. I always can get some quality reading done there. Library. Pretty funny. James Stoughton, our co-host down in Australia, when I was living in England, I was lucky enough to go to Sunderland Stadium White to watch Fulham win 3-0. It was a rare away win, and we'll always remember that day. Okay, so those are the comments from the Fulham supporters. David, just real quick on the Emirates, is it really that quiet there?
I think it's kind of a bit of an in-joke that they used to call Highbury the library. So it's think it's just there's this kind of conception or misconception that Arsenal fans don't make very much noise. I don't think it's quite that bad because, you know, 60,000 people do make some noise. Perhaps just, I think what you notice with, in the old days, we used to call them the screamers. You'd go away to places like Huddersfield and there'd be 4,000 people there in a tin shed. And suddenly they'd make this ferocious amount of noise because it's just the acoustics used to reverberate really well. See, this is maybe a problem with Craven Cottage because it's open on the riverside and the sound can just drift away. Some of these enclosed stadia, they seem to reverberate the sound a lot better. So I think it's about local acoustics as well as the crowd itself. But, you know, some fans are, you know, Stoke used to be perceived as being very loud, didn't they? I think they were the loudest in the Premier League when they did a measure of it. So it's kind of, I don't think Arsenal are particularly quiet. I think it's just one of these things that people like to point at them, really.
Yeah, no, I hear you, David. I'm glad that you explained that. Really, really good explanation there. All right, guys, before we move on, I just want to share this. I don't know if either one of you are Star Wars fans, but my wife, you know, I can... just because I happen to see this. My wife is actually at Skywalker Ranch as we speak. If you're a friend of mine on Facebook, I actually shared a picture of my wife at Skywalker Ranch. In the background, there's a statue of Yoda there. So if for some reason you're a friend of mine on Facebook, definitely check that out. My wife is having the time of her life. I'm doing some business and checking out Skywalker Ranch. So I don't know why I'm sharing that with you guys, but I just thought I'd mention that just because I happen to see a picture. All right, guys, let's move on, and let's go to my second Cottage Talk Facebook question, which has a ton of responses to it. And here it is. Should Fulham play Brian Ruiz regularly again since his loan move fell through? David, I'm going to start with you again. Our show has become the Brian Ruiz show at times, so what are your thoughts on this?
Well, we had a bit of a chat about this last night. I think... had we been wonderful without him, then you would say, no, let's not bother. But we've been just as bad, if not worse, without him. So I think you've got to consider him as well to play. The matter is, as I said last night, if he's got the hump with Fulham because he sees that we've messed him up, and I know Fulham are saying it's not their fault, but to me, I don't know. I think Fulham screwed this one up myself. And so if he's got it in his head that that's the case, perhaps his heart's not going to be in it. For me, his heart wasn't in it anyway beforehand. He didn't seem happy at all. You know, he scored a winning goal in the last minute and he hardly celebrated. That's how, you know, how sort of morose he is with it all, I think. So if he's not going to play to the best of his abilities, then it's difficult to say. Certainly, I think Kit said already that he's not planning to play him tomorrow or start him tomorrow, and I would have thought that'd be a bit soon. I think it's got to be, you know, how much hunger he has for it and also what's going to happen. I mean, is it a fait accompli that he's going in the summer anyway now? Is he just going to be going through the motions? He doesn't have to play for a move because he's going anyway unless we force him to exercise the option. But I would assume that's a two-way thing. We just can't tell him he's staying, whether he likes it or not. So I don't know. It's difficult because he's obviously a very talented player. But as I said to you last night, we have this kind of scenario again, like we have with the strikers. We have Kaká, who's, you know, quick and darts around all over the place, but maybe doesn't have the quality with the passing. And Ruiz should have much better quality with the passing, but it slows the game up. If you could put Kaká and Ruiz together, you could have someone who doesn't run and doesn't pass. Or on the other hand, you could have someone who can run and can pass. So I think it's a matter of being very careful with the selection. I don't think he should automatically play just because he's around. It has to be if his attitude is right and, you know, and the match is right, because there's matches where it just does not suit him to play. And if we are looking to go more as a 4-4-2, then it's more difficult to fit him in, of course, isn't it? So I think, you know, take a balanced view on it. Don't guarantee him a place, but don't rule him out either.
Interesting take there, Dave. Very interesting. And I think the number one thing for me is, what's his mindset? And that's something that I don't think we're going to know. You know, again, he's being paid by Fulham Football Club, and again, I'm going to play an interview done earlier with Kit, and he does address it, and he does mention that he did talk to Brian, and Brian, you know, again, he had a good conversation with him. So for me, if his mindset is that he's going to play out the string with Fulham and give 110%, fine. But I think that's my only concern. Well, I shouldn't say my only concern. My other concern is what you just mentioned. Maybe there are certain matches he shouldn't be starting or shouldn't be playing based on how we're playing, how our opponent's playing. I think he can be an asset, but I think in certain situations maybe he shouldn't be playing. Like you mentioned, Dave, there are certain clubs that maybe he just doesn't match up great against, and then there are others where he will flourish. But my number one thing with Brian Ruiz is mindset. You know, again, he's professional, but what's his mindset going to be? If he wants to give Fulham everything that he can give him, then I'm all for it. That's my only concern. So, Matt, I'm going to go to you again. As a coach, you probably have to worry about these types of things every once in a while. So I'm curious your thoughts on Brian Ruiz and what would you do with him?
Well, I'm not going to be crazy controversial here because David actually took the words right out of my mouth. I think if the game calls for it, you play him. If it doesn't, you don't. I don't think that things should really change on that end to where, oh, my God, we have him for the rest of the year. We have to use him as much as we can. I don't think that that's necessarily the case. From a professional standpoint, you hope that just that he can show his professionalism and do a job. And, at the end of the day for these guys, it is their job. It is their way to earn a living. And so you hope that he approaches it like that in a very professional manner and will, when called upon, will do his best. You never want to see somebody sandbag something, just sit back and not do that, and just collect a paycheck, because I feel like that stuff, if you believe in karma, may come back to bite you, and if you decide to do that to a club. So, and I tell you, the one thing that I could see him really actually helping us is kind of what we were talking about before David got on, is I feel like we've lost some creativity, especially in the final third. And
right.
Even though I know that we're not the biggest fans of him, that's actually one thing he does decently well at times. And so, maybe he might be able to help, in that way, maybe even coming off the bench or whatever, could help change a game, could help, just kind of bring in something different, from what we have on the field.
No, that's a very good point there, Matt. And it's funny because Dave and I really had a good conversation yesterday about creativity and specifically about strikers. And, obviously Brian Ruiz is not really a striker. He's more of an attacking midfielder. But what's interesting, and I want to ask you this, because, again, we're talking about creative players. And I'm curious your thoughts. I have no idea what you thought about this player, but I've grown to really appreciate what Bobby Zamora did for Fulham as a complete striker. I mean, he could do it all. And I'm curious your thoughts on, are we missing that complete striker? Because we have players that can do good things well. Certain things well, but can't do the entire thing. No one can really hold up the ball. And, and the one great thing about Zamora, Nat, is that he could bring others into the play. I'm curious your thoughts on that, and could that also be part of the issue that we're having, is that we don't have someone that could do it all?
I definitely think that could be the case. I think, we are up front, we are decently one-dimensional. We don't have anybody that particularly enjoys playing with their back to goal. And Zamora, that seemed to be kind of his calling card was, I'm going to get you on my back and I'm going to turn you and look to slip people in and things like that. And so, I think that is something we're missing. And, I was able to see him play a good bit, especially in the season that we went, to the Europa League final. And, just what he was able to do to just keep defenders off balance. Am I going to slip somebody in? Am I going to turn you? I'm going to read you. And it feels like our defender or our forwards are, I don't want to say, easy to read or very, predictable, but I also don't think we have somebody to add a dimension. I do think we are at times very one-dimensional.
Right. And again, that's kind of where I think possibly Brian Ruiz can help with that one dimension. Again, help the players that are, I guess you could say, one dimension with his creativity, help them, because I think that's something that we're missing. And again, the more I think about, nothing against Hugo, Hugo's done a job, but Hugo is one-dimensional. Ross McCormack, again, you know, offers a great deal. He does. But, again, is he the complete striker that that someone like Zamora was? No, because he's a different type of player. So I think that, you know, again, I'm not saying we should bring in Matt Smith, but, you know, it's, you know that type of player we just don't have. We don't have that hold-up player. But we don't have that Zamora player where he could do it all. You know, like, he could shoot from everywhere, and he could also set up his teammates. I think, you know, again, I've really been giving this a lot of thought. Why have the goals been not coming as quickly as they were before? And I think part of it has to do with the strikers. You know, again, they are one-dimensional. All right, let's get back to Brian Ruiz, and I'll share some thoughts of the Fulham supporters. Liam Burns said, yes, he's a Fulham player and should be treated like any other while he's at the club. He could keep us out of relegation dogfight as well. Harry Double wrote, definitely, he's shown in this league he can skip past players and create chances. He will bring us more goals and assists. Isn't there a staff floating around? We haven't won a game without him playing. I'm not sure about that, but that would be very interesting if that's true. Nick East wrote, yes, we need him. Simple as that. John Mason, if we have to pay him, we should play him. Billy Marsh said, Lord, yes. Daniel Bourne says 100% yes. Jack Stanley wrote, was useful in his first game back against Bolton. Been essentially anonymous since. No. Giannis Janaeus, absolutely. Have we won any games since the Levante saga began? No. Ruiz is a critical part of our team. Grant Harris, absolutely. Keith Harris, I'd be surprised if he didn't bring him back in the squad. Kit knew Ruiz didn't want to be a Fulham when he took over, and that didn't stop him from starting him. I don't know why it would now. Yavor Alexiev, yes. We didn't get anyone to replace him, so he will have to do. Christine Asland, if you don't use it, you will lose it. Okay, Steve Butters, yes. A bit of experience to the team. Very good point. George Kenton, no, get rid of him, lazy git. Okay. Yeah, Evans, yes, he's a quality player, needs to be integrated back into the team. His experience is essential. This young team is showing inconsistency in their performances. Good spells, but not able to perform to the highest level over 90 minutes. She is right about that. David Tate, definitely, he's been missed. Sean Graham Burke, yes, he's still on the payroll, isn't he? Guys, we have so many more, and I just don't have time to get through all of them. But that'll just give you a flavor of what the Fulham supporters think about the Brian Ruiz situation. And, David, what are your thoughts about what I read from the Fulham supporters?
I've only just stopped laughing, actually. You probably heard me, didn't you? The one who said lazy git, I just couldn't help myself there. I mean, it's kind of almost pretty obvious that if you've got someone on your payroll, you've got to try and use them, haven't you? You have to use them. There is this myth going around about us not winning when he doesn't play or something, but I would throw back the Nottingham Forest match where we were 3-0 up very nicely without him, and we clung on at the end when he came on as sub. So it's kind of, you can use statistics and more statistics and damn lies and whatever, you know, to try and prove a case. I don't think it's as easy as that, but it is obvious that we're not doing very well at the moment. As I said, if we've suddenly started doing better without him in the team, then it'd be easy to say, well, don't put him back in the side. But I think Kit needs a shake-up of what he's doing at the moment. And if that includes him, so be it. And, you know, from what you've read, and obviously I haven't seen all the comments, and you may be just picking out some, but from the selection you've given, it does seem most people are in favour of getting him back in the team in some shape or form. And I largely agree with that he should be there or thereabouts, you know, even if he's only on the bench, because we saw a couple of games where he's come on and he's looked okay coming on. Perhaps that is more of a role for him to come on and do what he does. It's going to be difficult because, as I say, when we have Ruiz in the team, we've had this kind of scenario that we have to kind of build the team around him, and we have to play the system. And you know, we had a long chat yesterday. We'll talk about it today about maybe we need to ditch the diamond system one way or another.
Right.
But if you're going to be playing Brian Ruiz, it's, you know, that's more of a reason that the diamond situation would be retained, of course, unless we start having silly things like Ruiz playing on the wing or Ruiz playing as an actual striker. So, you know, it's a fine balance, isn't it, to be found? And, you know, I hope, Matt, we can talk about the formations. I don't know if you listened to what we talked about yesterday, because I'm saying the diamond is costing us. The diamond is costing us because our fullbacks are under pressure too much. We're giving away too many corners. We're conceding too many crosses. We need to be playing higher up the pitch on the wings. And that's going to be hard if Ruiz is in the team.
Yeah. Now, listen, I hear you, David, and we're definitely going to talk about the formation once we get into talking about the match, because I definitely want to get your thoughts on David's thoughts on the formation about possibly changing away from the diamond because of the issues that David was talking about last night. We'll definitely get more into it once we preview the match. But going back to Ruiz, Matt, you were also talking about, listen, he does give us some experience, and Thea Evans, bro, and that actually really hit home with me, talking about the lack of experience that we have. You know, maybe we do need his experience to help out the youngsters.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, it goes back to what we were saying before about how young the side is, and, you know, the problem is he the kind of experience you want? you know, Parker is the kind of experienced player that you want young kids to learn from.
Right.
You know, I think that day in, day out, his work ethic and things like that, you know, and you wonder, would he have the same effect, you know, is that really what we want the kids to, you know, to learn? Because he does have the tendency to be a lazy git, as somebody so eloquently put. But I think experience is experience. And I think in terms of actual on-the-field creativity and things like that, yeah, there's some things that he could definitely bring to the table. But, you know, we can get more into the formation stuff, but I do think that with the way that I think that we should probably be playing, he's not really going to fit into it, from a pure coach's side.
Okay, fantastic, and definitely want to get further into that, Matt, once we start previewing the match, because David and I were really touching on it yesterday. I want to get further in. Once we talk about the actual match, that should be very interesting. I definitely want your take on that. Really look forward to that. To your take on that. Okay. Now we've talked about Brian Ruiz. Third topic. You know, again, I got a nice email from Stuart Roberts the other day, and he had mentioned that he tried contacting me on the Cottage Talk Facebook page, and he did it directly to me. And I don't see all those direct comments. You know, again, the way that the system is for the Facebook pages, I don't see them all the time, and I didn't see his commentary. So I told him that we would discuss a subject that he actually emailed me about and get your thoughts on it. And it does deal with financial fair play. So again, we don't understand. Let's be honest. I don't think any of us understand exactly how financial fair play is working. Mike Gregg is going to try to find some more information for us directly from the club, exactly how it's going to work or how it is working. But let's just go with this topic, with the idea that we don't understand 100% exactly what's going on with financial fair play, but it is a factor here. So here's Stewart's topic that we're going to discuss. And, David, I'm going to start with you. Should Fulham have spent some money in the January transfer window, as they might not be able to splash the cash this summer because of financial fair play? What are your thoughts about Stuart? I've seen others say this, that they thought that we should have spent the money for the sake of spending money because we might not have that option as much this summer. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it would be obviously helpful to know the exact rules so we could give a definitive answer. But let's that's right. But let's take it for read then that Stuart is correct and what he says is going, and let's go along that path for now. And obviously, if it's not right, it's not right. But
right,
you know, if it means that because of these rules, we're not allowed to invest in the squad in the summer, and we should have done or we could have done back then, well, then it's yet another screw up, isn't it? Basically, you know, the Brian Ruiz situation obviously is a bit of a screw up, and this will be just another one because we all know that we need to, you know, enhance the squad. You know, yes, we have a young players that we hope are going to get better, but we need certain players in there, and I think we know that you know, we just don't have that creativity. And whether that will come by a change of the formation, I don't know. I think it may help, but I still think we are lacking some super creative player in there. Or, well, yeah, as we said, like a someone who has the best bits of Brian Ruiz and Kaká maybe to play in the central. And
right.
also striker-wise, someone who can do, you know, the role that Samora used to do or something close to that. Obviously, we shouldn't be talking about Matt Smith now because it's going to get very confusing, obviously, with Matt Smith on the show. and we'll never know which Matt Smith we're talking about. It's a bit like when you keep talking about Chris David and you keep talking about David. I don't know if you're talking about me or you're talking about him. So we won't talk about Matt Smith, but I would like to see him back, nevertheless, to see what he can offer in a kind of revamped lineup. But no, it's folly, really, that we're trying to get back to the Premier League, or supposedly
right.
we're trying to get back to the Premier League, and yet every transfer window passes, and it's kind of, we're not really making strides forward. We're just kind of treading water, as far as I can see, and we're just hoping that, you know, the bunch of youngsters we have are suddenly going to come good, or in time are going to come good. But, you know, it's about patience, and the fans are starting to lose patience, I think. And I'm starting to lose patience, really, because it doesn't seem that we're progressing. We just, you know, we're treading water, as far as I can see, really. And there seems to be a real lack of urge to invest. And if now we can't in the summer because of the rules, then it is...
Well, we don't know this.
You know,
we don't know this, right.
We don't, but we're talking hypothetically. Obviously, Stuart
right.
seems to have some inkling of this. And in that basis, if Stuart is right, then for me, it's a poor move by Fulham.
Right, right. And again, listen, we're not sure exactly how much money they're going to have to spend this summer. You know, again, this is a hypothetical situation because we just don't understand the financial fair play rules yet. You know, hopefully over time we'll get more information. We can really have a good conversation about it. But his thoughts are, you know, again, we had an opportunity here. We did not take advantage of it. And David, here are two factors in this, and then Matt, I'm going to go to you, that I want you to think about. Number one, do you just spend money for the sake of spending money, David? That's number one, because I don't think you do. And I think you need to bring in the right players. And even, you know, again, I read something from Kit talking about, you know, again, they want to bring in players that are the right players for them. You know, I'm totally against just buying players for the sake of buying players. I think that you need to bring in the right players. So that could be a factor in why they did not bring someone in. That's number one. Number two is Mike Rigg. I keep going back to Mike Rigg. Mike Rigg probably has a long-term vision of what Fulham are going to be. And it might not be until this summer till he implements it. He needs time to get in. So I think that might also be a factor in why we did not see many moves in the January transfer window. But getting back to Stuart, listen, I want new players. I think Fulham are maybe two or three really good players away from being a very good side. I'm thinking that it's going to happen this summer, but again, we have to, you know, hopefully we'll get more information on financial fair play to see if they could bring in those types of players. I think that's what they need to do. Was it a lost opportunity? It's only a lost opportunity if they could not get a player that they wanted. Then it's a lost opportunity. That's the way I look at it. Because I don't want to just spend money for the sake of spending money. You got to find the players, the right players. And if they couldn't, and they couldn't make a deal, then I'm okay with it. I'm disappointed, but I'm okay with it. Matt, I want to go to you. I want to get your thoughts about this because I know many fans are disappointed by the January transfer window. And I think that's where this is coming from, Stuart. That's why I'm glad that we could have this discussion. This is a little hypothetical because we don't understand financial fair play at this point. But what are your thoughts about this discussion? You know, what if we are hamstrung this summer? You know, again, because of financial fair play. Do you understand why the fans would be upset? And also, comment on my thoughts on it because I personally don't want Fulham to bring in players just to bring in players.
Yeah, you know, as soon as I saw this question, I went straight and started to research the financial fair play stuff for the championship, and I'm not sure I understand it more than I did before I started. I think I may even understand a little bit less. But basically, from what I can gather is as long as we lose in our annual account, as long as we lose less than £8 million, then there's no real sanction that hits us. you know, the one thing that I would kind of say that kind of excludes this theory of this being an effect of the transfer window is that we got a $24 million parachute payment this year,
right,
from the Premier League, and so that's going to definitely help balance the books, if you will. And so I'm not sure if we can necessarily blame it on financial fair play. You know, I think that maybe a possibility is people really trying to figure out, because it only got implemented, I think, last December or December 2013 even. But I think some people are still trying to come to grips with how it works as well, even in the executive side of the club, because it is quite confusing. As you start to read it, it looks like you're reading Chinese a little bit. and then it goes a little bit in circles. But basically what I could tell is if you lose less than £8 million, then there are very few sanctions as long as your owner is still injecting money into the club, so on and so forth. You know, not only did we get a £24 million parachute payment this year, but we also have a $19.2 million parachute payment coming next year. So
right.
It's not like we get the $24 million and that's it. And so, you know, I don't think that that's necessarily going to have an effect on us at all. In terms of the whole Mike Rigg thing, I think
yes.
That could play a role, because he doesn't actually start until March. I read something where he doesn't actually officially start until March. So I'm wondering if he basically had a bug in somebody's ear saying, whoa, 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 let's not bring in anybody here because I may just get rid of them, and that'd be bad money spent. And so, you know, that may be – I think that may be more of a reason than maybe the financial fair play thing.
Okay.
But, you know, I think we definitely need to bring in players, and I'm with you. We don't just need to spend money just to spend money. We've got to spend money. We've got to be smart. We've got to be frugal, if you will, with our spending. And I think the one thing we've got to do immediately is we've got to update our scouting system. You know, if you look at clubs like Southampton and, you know, other clubs in that vein that have gone and really bought players for cheap and then really have taken off, that's really what I would like to see is our scouting system improved, so we find those players that, you know, are a little bit under the radar, because let's be honest, those are the players we're going to get now. We're not going to get the top-level signings anymore. You know, we're not even going to get the top-level loan signings. It's going to be players that a little bit under the radar that we find that fit our system and thrive in our system, and thrive at a small club like Fulham and be able to push on.
No, those are all very good points there, Matt, and I'm glad that you brought up the scouting and the comparison to Southampton, because I actually want Fulham to become Southampton. I used to always say Everton. No, it really is Southampton, because Southampton, I think, are doing it the new way. I guess you could say the new way, the modern way, and I think it could eventually really pay off for them. It's paying off pretty good this season for them, but I think long-term, I think it's really going to pay off for them, and Fulham should look at how Southampton are doing it, and it really does start with their academy. That's where it all began with them. So if that's the path Fulham are going down, of course, with Hugh Jennings coming from Southampton, I'm all for it. And I agree with you. You know, again, they're going to have to really work on their scouting, make sure that they bring all the players that they can. You know, like you said, you know, whatever the situation is, you know, again, they won't get those top level prospects anymore because they're not in the Premier League, but they're going to have to really, you know, dig deep and try to find players wherever they can. That's why the scouting is very important. Good point by you. But right back to before we move on, I, you know, again, talked about the hypothetical situation, but if you are right and we do have enough money coming in and we would have the opportunity to spend some money this summer, Matt, to me, this is the make-or-break time for Fulham Football Club, getting back to the Premier League. It's going to be what they do this summer. Would you agree with that? Because if they brought in, say, two or three players, instead of the Ross McCormack splash, let's talk about you bring in three players that are really good players, but not to the level of McCormack. Doesn't that make more sense at this point? They need a few pieces. I would say maybe three to four pieces. But this summer, they really have to get it done.
Yeah, I agree. The only thing that I would disagree with is the number. I think we actually need five or six.
Okay.
Because if you think about three to four players, that's only going to really push those players to the bench. we need a new, we need some more players on the bench to give us depth as well. So
okay,
I haven't really been too impressed with that. So that's really the only way that, the only thing that I would disagree on is that it's not three or four. I think it's more five or six. And,
okay.
You know, maybe three or four of those are starters, but then maybe the other two are, you know, are bench players that add to our depth.
What I was really getting at, Matt, it was more impact players.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's probably right. I think, you know, maybe as many as two or three of our back line need to be replaced. And then if we can find a big, strong forward that, you know, maybe we already have it in my namesake down, you know, at Bristol City, you know, and you know, maybe we already have it. But I do think that we, you know, definitely need, I'd say, if that's the case, if you're just talking about impact players, I would definitely agree.
Okay. You know, Definitely five or six is where I would go, but I'm talking about like players that are going to be part of the start, that could potentially be part of the starting 11 and starting. You know, that's what I'm looking at. A creative central midfielder, you know, again, to play the role that David and I are talking to, if for some reason they want to stick with the with a diamond to play that cam role, and a striker and some help in back, you know, again, and finally get David a backup goalkeeper. I think David's dying for a backup goalkeeper. We need to get one for David. So definitely there as well. All right, guys, let's move on. And what I'm going to do now, and David, this will give you a chance to jump off the line, I'm going to play the interview with Kit that Sarah did earlier and want to talk about that. That's going to lead into our preview of the upcoming match. David, before you drop off, have you had a chance to watch this?
I don't need to drop off because you cut me off a bit earlier, so I've got a long way left. But no, I didn't. I did read on Twitter sort of the comments he was making in the main. You know,
okay.
Things like Hoogland being close to fitness, and you know, about Brian Ruiz, of course, and Amber Beata coming back as well. But I didn't actually hear it, so I will listen to it. I will drop off at some point and come back. So I'm just confused because we've got Matt Smith and Matt Smith. We've got Mike Gregg and Mike Gregg or whatever. And it's like, I don't know who we're talking about now. Every time you say Mike Gregg, I think you're talking about Mike Gregg, obviously. And Matt, I don't know. So I'm going to, I don't know. I haven't had my dinner because obviously the bus situation deprived me of my dinner. So I think my brain is a bit starved of oxygen. So
Okay.
I should stuff my face while I'm listening to Kit, I think, for a few minutes. So
okay, because,
honestly,
I definitely want your thoughts on Kit because, again, again, we talk about some of his interviews. You don't learn too much. I think you actually learned some things here, so I definitely want you to listen to this. So without further ado, here's the interview with Kit Simons.
Kit, Tuesday night at Bolton really was the game of two halves scenario, going ahead, playing so well in the first half, and then conceding just before half time, and it was a different team in the second half. Can you tell us what happened?
It was really frustrating at the moment. You know, it's a little bit of a common theme, which is becoming annoying and, like I said, frustrating. But we're playing very well for periods or half of the game, and in my opinion, looking, you know, the better side and the more dangerous side, the more likely to score. But then when we're on top and dominant in games, not really sort of making our chances and our possession and our dominance count, and by getting the goals, you know. Very frustrating to concede, see the goal right in the stroke of half-time or just before half-time. And then, you know, half-time seems to always say we need to do more of the same, keep pressing them, keep the runs in behind, which are causing big problems. And our movement, they change their shape slightly, but, you know, not enough to be an excuse, and we were just on the back foot. They put us under pressure from the start of the half. We had quite a few corners, but we actually defended them quite well. There's one cost us cleared off the line, but overall we defended them pretty well. And you know, even at stages like that, when you're not playing particularly well and the other team's on top, that's where you've got to dig in at times and stay resilient and certainly not concede.
Is that one of the things about having a young team? It's that kind of not maximising on those chances and then having to be more resilient, and when those chances haven't gone for you, it's your confidence starts to go.
Well, it is. I mean, I talk about the trust, honesty and belief within the whole football club, but, you know, obviously ultimately, especially within that first team group. And, you know, belief is a funny thing, and confidence obviously linked very closely to that, and, you know, it needs to be built on solid foundations, and we're still trying to build it and trying to improve it. And it's almost a chicken and egg thing, you know. Winning games gives you that belief, but then with the belief, you win games. So it's, you know, one of them's got to come first, sort of thing. So,
but and not taking those chances also causes a little bit of frustration, and you could kind of see that a little bit in the second half.
Yeah, there is a bit, and people get frustrated, then we'll get a bit flustered, and, you know, rather than you know, clear our lines with a little bit of culture, if you like, almost when we're under no pressure, we're just kicking it away and slashing at the ball, and, you know, whereby first half we were, you know, if we win the ball back on the edge of our own box, we'd then, you know, take care with it and build an attack. So it's the same situation and just dealt with very differently because of a different mindset. So that's what we need to change. And, you know, we had a meeting with the players. We showed the video from Tuesday night's game, and you know, everyone was of the same sort of mindset. It's just, you know, the confidence goes, and then people start becoming nervous. A couple of mistakes creep in, and it has that knock on effect. But yes, and we need to change it. We can change it because, you know, I say the frustrating thing is we can play so well at times, and that's frustrating, but that also gives me great belief. You know, I played in the Fulham team who played really good football to get up out of the Championship, so I know you can play good football in this division and be very successful and do well. But ultimately we need to tighten up in other areas to then allow our good football to be able to be what shines through.
And so to tomorrow, Ipswich, a different proposition again, coming, riding high in the league, doing very well, on the cusp of playoff positions. How is that going to go for you? What kind of tactical changes would you make? What personnel do you have at your disposal? Talk us through tomorrow.
Well, they'll be, you know, Mick McCarthy's sort of very wily. He's been around a long time and knows this league particularly very, very well. So, you know, there'll be no surprises from an Ipswich team. They'll be very strong, very organised, and they got some good players as well, you know, and obviously Mick's a very good manager. So, yeah, we know it's going to be very tough, but, you know, most Championship games are. You know, you're not going to get any easy ones, that's for sure. I'm conscious of a few things that haven't been going, or a few areas of the pitch that haven't been going particularly well for us. And without sort of saying too much, we're looking to address those, and there'll be a couple of sort of slight changes to how we do things, you know, which I think are probably needed at the moment. Not that I'm going away from the things I believe in, because I wouldn't, and I won't do that. But, you know, also I'm not so stubborn that I'm not willing to change things. I just want this team and this football club to do well, and, you know, I'll do what's necessary for that to happen.
And so, in terms of playing personnel, there are Tim Hoogland played 60 minutes in the game against Spurs, the friendly in midweek, which is very positive, but Fernando Amorebieta wasn't able to feature in that game. Are they any closer to first team positions, or is that not even in the reckoning for?
No, getting a lot closer. Tim now, having had the 45 against West Ham and the 60 against Spurs, is getting very close now. So I just want to up him again to, so he's fully fit then, fully match fit, and ready to go. You know, he's chomping at the bit now to get back involved, which is brilliant. That's exactly what I want. But also, I'm conscious when he comes back in, I want him back in to stay. And we need to do what's right by him. But he's very close now. Obviously, Fernando unfortunately picked up a slight thigh strain, so he missed Wednesday. So he did 45 against West Ham last Friday, but he's now that little bit behind Tim. Because, you know, although he's looking good in training, most of the training is in smaller areas until you actually get that match exposure. You know, we're never quite ready, so that he needs to top that up a little bit and get a bit more game time under his belt, and then he'll be ready. But he's looking very good in training, so that's a positive too.
And of course, the talking point at the moment is Brian Ruiz and that loan move falling through for Levante. Whether or not he is able to feature, whether he's happy enough to feature, you tell us about Brian.
Yeah, well, I was speaking to Brian this morning. He's very disappointed that the move fell through. And I'm disappointed for him, because I know how much he wanted it to happen. But, you know, we had a good chat this morning. He's a good person, Brian, a good professional and a good player. So, you know, he's back with us now. He'll crack on, knuckle down with his training and work his socks off between now and the end of the season.
But presumably not available tomorrow because he's missed so much training.
Missed quite a bit of training. I mean, he's potentially might be involved as a substitute tomorrow. Trained very well again today, trained yesterday. So he's got a chance of being involved on the bench tomorrow, but he certainly won't be starting.
And the president of Levante was saying that Fulham didn't play its part in the loan move going through. That's simply not the case, is it?
No, it's all, I mean, it's left quite late to the last day of the Spanish window, which was, you know, more down to them than us, that's for sure. And when you leave things so late, there's always that chance it won't quite go through on time. Now, all our paperwork was through on time. It was close, but it was through on time, and, you know, the FA have backed us in our case there. So, you know, all our stuff was done on time. It was at the other end that things didn't quite go through in time.
And the most important thing is that Brian, now for Fulham, will play until the end of the season and is committed to that.
Absolutely. You know, Brian understands, you know, ultimately it's a job. You know, Fulham pay his wages. He's a Fulham player till that changes. And he's a good person, a good professional, like I say. So he'll knuckle down and get on with it.
We wish you luck tomorrow.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
Okay, guys, we are back, and that was an interview done earlier with the Fulham manager, Kit Simons, by Sarah Brooks, Director of Communications for Fulham Football Club. And, David, that was about a little over 7 minutes long. What were your thoughts of that interview with Kit? What did you get out of this one?
Well, my biggest worry was obviously you had me on mute because I was stuffing my face while I was listening to that. I didn't want any strange noises. Well, Kit's kind of, like, come out and... It's funny, really. He's stated the obvious in a way that, you know, he accepts that things aren't right either. But,
yeah,
you know, obviously, in a way, it's a little bit kind of, I suppose, I don't know if it's something hypocritical or not, but it's, well, he's the manager, he's the man in charge, he's the one who's responsible for these things. So, therefore, it's all very well saying things aren't right, but it's his job to make sure they are right. He did hint at a change of system. I don't know if that...
He did.
Again, maybe he was listening to us last night, you know, Russ. You know?
Okay.
What do you... Stranger things may happen, you know. Stranger things may happen. But I guess that the scary thing would be that you and me are now managing the club, if that was the case. But let's go out on a limb, and we're gonna come up with some, you know, with Matt as well, and we can blame Matt when it all goes wrong, obviously. But we can come up with a new strategy tonight and see if he does it tomorrow, and then we'll know for sure, I think. But you know, I mean, most of it does come under the kind of, you know, if I'm allowed to say it, the no shit Sherlock, really. You know, it's pretty obvious to all of us that, you know, we can't put two good halves together in a match. And something needs to change. And the Ruiz situation, I don't know. The thing that annoys me is, why leave the damn thing to the last minute? Why do they always do these things? The transfer window opens on the 1st of January. Why does everyone leave it all so late? You know, Ruiz, it's not like we were looking to... Sometimes we look to buy a player and you have to sell a player to buy a player. And, you know, there's a chain. It's like when you're buying houses, you know. And if one vendor pulls out, then the whole thing collapses. This isn't the case. We were looking to get rid of Brian Ruiz as a straight deal. No other deal was connected to that. Why the hell did they not just start on the 1st of January? Why didn't they get it sorted? Leave us too late. Obviously, Brian's upset, but then, you know, it was hardly a dream move. You know, he must be really desperate to get away from us to go to a relegation-threatened bottom team, you know. They are a pretty poor team. That shows how, you know, desperate he was to get away from us. It was hardly Barcelona or Real Madrid, was it? But anyway, he's
no,
here.
No, it wasn't, and, David, but go,
you know,
ahead.
He's here, and let's see. And, you know, I think if he makes the bench tomorrow and he gets a chance to come on, we'll see what, you know, what he can do. But I think much more importantly is what Kit does from the kickoff and what he does at half-time, really. But obviously Kit's aware things not right, but then it's not rocket science. We can all see that as well.
No, it's not rocket science, David. But, you know, again, I think a big thing that I got out of this is that he's willing to change. You know, again, we've talked about this. The one thing that frustrates me about managers and coaches that basically say it's my way or the highway. He understands that things aren't going right. He's not fixed into doing it his way. He's willing to change his way to help the team. And that is one of the major positives I get out of it. You can look at it a different way. That's one of the major things I got out of it, is that obviously you could say it's obvious that things need to change. But to admit and actually say we're going to change things, even though he did say slightly change things, you know, the fact that he's admitting that, I think, is a big deal. You know, and hopefully we will see that tomorrow, you know, again, it sounds like that's part of the plan. I don't know exactly what that means, but I got a feeling there's going to be a change somewhat, whether it's personnel, whether it's formation. Something's going to change tomorrow, and like you mentioned, David, it needs to change. On the Brian Ruiz situation, before I go to Matt, here's my only thing that you just mentioned. You're talking about why is it always wait until the very end. My answer to that, David, is that it takes two to tango, right? It takes two to make a deal. How do you know that Fulham didn't want to have a deal done on day one? You don't know that. We don't know that. All I know is, you know, again, I'm going based on what I listened to, and Kit made it sound like this was more on Levante's end than his end. But again, you know, we could say, well, of course he's going to say that. But that's what it sounds like to me. According to him, they had everything, they had all their ducks in a row. They were ready to go, and something didn't happen quickly enough. And, you know, again, if you're Levante and you want the player, don't you try to get it done quicker? That's the way I'm looking at it. Why are they waiting to the last minute? So I understand how you're blaming Fulham, but I think you also have to blame Levante for not getting it done. And it didn't get done, so that's why we are in the situation that we're in. All right, Matt, I want to go to you. I want to get your thoughts on Kit's interview, and what did you get out of it?
Well, from the very get-go, as soon as he started talking about how we're not very consistent and how it's getting annoying and frustrating, if you watch the videos compared to how we just listened to it, if you watch the video and you watch his face, he's not saying that in jest in any way. He seems pretty aggravated with that whole situation. And so, you know, maybe the nice bubbly Kit we're getting is finally going to get, you know, a little bit of a little bit hot under the collar, and then maybe get after him a little bit. Maybe he has already, but he seemed pretty annoyed with that fact. So, and maybe it's just because he's had to talk about it all the time. But I think he made a good point in the whole catch 22 with, you know, for young players need confidence to win, but winning builds confidence. And so I think that's a good point. And I think having such a young team, you know, that is kind of tough. I mean, is how do you build a player's confidence without them being able to tangibly see, you know, results and success and things like that? And I think that's a part of this, just the modern-day athlete. I think they need to see success a lot more than maybe athletes in the past, as compared to maybe just seeing, you know, the best way that I put it to my players is everybody wants instant gratification these days. Everybody wants it now. And
right.
You know, I think what we've got to do is we've got to build a team that loves the process of getting better, and that's when you'll see the best results. But you know, to David's point, you know, if we're going to be the managers, I'll take the blame if I get the credit. So if we change the formation, if he changes the formation because we tell him to, then then I don't just want the blame. I also want the credit if it works.
Okay, Matt. Matt, definitely, and we're going to talk about formation coming up. I definitely want your thoughts on it and want David's thoughts on it. And listen, I don't know if Kit's listening, but if he does, and we come up with a suggestion that ends up being used, so be it. You know, and again, I will personally take the blame if we suggest something that doesn't work. But if it works, you know, and we suggested it, you know, hey, who knows? Who knows if he's listening? But I just find it funny that again, we're talking about change of formations, and I think we should be talking about it. And Matt, going back to you, because again, you deal with players all the time, you know, it's a confidence thing, and you just talked about it. When you don't see that instant gratification of a victory, you know, again, it becomes self-motivating. It's like, how do you self-motivate yourself, you know, to keep going, to understand that you, if you just keep playing, eventually you're going to get better. Eventually the results are going to happen. That's why it's funny, because this situation for me, I'm not as worried as some others are. I don't think Fulham are going to get relegated, and David and I have talked about it. If it continues going down this path, then obviously we would have to get into talking about relegation. I'm not there because I don't think it's going to happen, and I think all that we're watching is something that I've seen time and time again, a very young squad trying to grow up, and we're seeing the growing pains of it. And that's why we're not seeing one complete match. We are seeing one good half and bad half, because they're making mistakes, and hopefully they will start learning from them quicker, and we'll start, and the results will come. That's the way I look at it, and that's why I think it's just key to get through this year, to learn from this season, and then kick on next season, and really build from that, and bring on players to take us to the next level, and that's the way I'm looking at it. That's my approach, you know. That's the way I'm looking at it. All right, guys, let's move on. Let's start our preview. And I'm just going to start giving you guys just some basic information on Ipswich Town. They're currently fourth. They have 15 wins, 9 draws, 6 losses. They've scored 48. They've given up 30 with a goal differential, of plus 18 with 54 points. Fulham are currently 18th. They have 10 wins, 5 draws, 15 losses. They've scored 43. They've given up 53. So obviously the goals are the big difference of goals against, for a minus 10 with 35 points. Okay. And just to tell you again, we talk about teams in form. This team actually has been beaten a few times recently on the road. I want to mention that. They are in fourth, but I want to go through some of their results just to tell you that lately they haven't been in complete positive form. You know, again, we'll go back 6 matches ago. They lost in the FA Cup to Southampton 1-0. They beat Millwall 3-1 on the road. Then they lost to Brighton 3-2 on the road. Then they drew at home against Wigan. Then they lost to Rotherham last week on the road 2-0. Again, they've lost 2 recently on the road. Then they beat Sheffield Wednesday at home 2-1. So this is a team that's actually been going through a little bit of a rough patch, which is, put that in perspective, and look at the teams that recently have beaten them. 2 teams below Fulham, Rotherham and Brighton. Both teams have beaten Ipswich Town. So just keep that in mind when we go through this preview that this is, you know, again, I think this is a little bit different than Fulham going to be playing Derby County in a few weeks. I think this is, believe it or not, I'm going to start off by saying this is a winnable match. And I'm going to even go back to the first time Fulham played them. You know, that's a long time ago, but I thought that this is a good side, but I still think this is a winnable match. All right. That's just my thoughts on Ipswich Town. Matt, I'm going to go to you. What are your thoughts about them going into this match?
Well, I think at this point in the season, I think, you know, one way you can look at it is that at this point in the season, the table doesn't really lie. I don't think there are any pretenders in the top
right.
5 or 6. I think they're all very good teams. You know, it's not like it's after the first month of the season, somebody went on a good run or whatever. I think at this point in the season, you kind of, the cream starts to rise to the top a little bit. I do think that you know, they've had some players come in that have really helped, and you know, so you know, again, the table doesn't lie, but like you said, they've lost the last 2 away matches to teams below us. So, you know, if you're looking for a ray of hope, I think that's it. Not to mention the way that we matched up with them at the beginning of the season. You know, it's definitely something that that we can kind of go into this match, I think, with a little bit of, you know, possibly a little bit of confidence.
And that's the way I'm trying to approach this. You know, again, you are 100% right. The table doesn't lie. David says it all the time. They're fourth, and they deserve to be fourth. This is a solid, very good team. I shouldn't even say good team. They're a very good team. I just think that they're a little bit different than, say, Bournemouth and also Derby County. I just think that they're a couple of that, but they are a very good team. But I just wanted to bring in their form recently, Matt, just to show fans that hey, maybe this is a team that we shouldn't be fearing. We should say, you know what, maybe we have a chance. And that's why I also wanted to mention the first match of the season, because, I thought Fulham should have gotten something out of that match. I do want to mention before I go to you, David, that Daryl Murphy – is their leading goal scorer. He has 19 goals. He's also the top goal scorer in the championship. So, again, that just tells you how good of a player he is. And if we can remember correctly, David McGoldrick is a dangerous player as well. He has 7 goals on the season. All right, David, I just want to get your thoughts on Ipswich Town heading into this match.
Well, yeah, those two are the big concern for me, really. And, yeah, it's funny how things have changed, because at the start of the season, we thought, yeah, we could win this game. Then we started and we didn't do very well. And then last 15 minutes or so, it was all Fulham. And really, you know, had the game carried on playing, there was only one winner. If only we were, you know, we had the same rules as Man United, keep playing until you score or whatever, we could have got something out of that game, because we really had them on the rack at the end. What did you say about they're not on such a good run at the moment? Well, nor were Bolton, so let's not, you know, get ourselves too excited about that. We are, you know, unfortunately, the team that seems to give bad teams a bit of a boost. But, you know, it's we need to find a win from somewhere, and, you know, hopefully this is the one. It's going to be interesting to see, obviously, what Kit does do with the system and how the players react to that. Because, you know, Kit tried changing the system against whoever it was, and remind me because my memory's gone. First half, we played the 4-4-2 and we was rubbish. Switched to the diamond second half, we were much better. And so, you know, we're trying to get away from the diamond and it didn't work last time. So, you know, will the same happen here? But we know for sure we've got to keep an eye on Murphy and McGoldrick.
Absolutely.
You know, at the start of the season, we're saying, well, hold on, this you know, these guys aren't that great. We shouldn't have a problem with them. And yet it's not just us. You know, they've done pretty well against most teams. And that's
they have.
What, you know, that's what a lot of teams in Championship are like. We've seen so many players, you know, look at Derby, like, you know, Martin and Asabalonga at Forest. And there's a lot of people who have got into really good regular goal-scoring rhythms, you know. And yet we've been fits and starts. We've got, you know, a very expensive striker there who's, you know, had some, you know, some good goals. But then five of those have been against Forest. If you take that out of the equation, he hasn't really scored very much. Hugo's on and off, you know. And obviously Matt's namesake has been scoring really well, but not for us. And in a different league. And I think this is, you know, this is the difference, isn't it? That most of the teams have been doing well have got, you know, one person at least who's been finding the net very regularly, if not two. And I'm not quite sure if we're really there. I mean, you know, our goal scoring is a big issue, as is, you know, our shots on target, our crosses, and so on and so forth. So I think we need, you know, as much as we need to stop the other team playing, I think we need to get our own house in order. We need to be getting more chances to score. We need to be getting the goals in. And, you know, as long as you can score more than the opposition, it doesn't really matter how many you concede.
That's a very good point, David. That's a very basic but true point, my friend. And listen, we've been talking about this. You know, Fulham are not really creating enough great scoring chances. They're just not. You know, again, they're not getting the ball in the box enough. They're not, you know, crossing the ball enough. They're not creating corners enough. And the opposition is. So that's what needs to change. There needs to be a little bit more balance to their approach. You know, again, we're not scoring enough at this point, honestly. So good by you for mentioning that. All right, David, real quick, because we do have a good amount to get to, because I definitely want to talk about the formation. I just want to get your thoughts on Mick McCarthy.
Well, he's one of these old-fashioned football managers, isn't he? You imagine he's not someone you mess with. He comes across as being a bit of a tough nut. I mean, he certainly was as a player, a no-nonsense central defender. And I imagine as a manager he's like that as well. You wouldn't want to go up and upset him because you'd like to get a smack in the face properly. I mean, you know, he does... You know, I think he's very straightforward. He's not someone who uses subtle language or subtle tactics. I think he's probably pretty forthright. He has clear ideas of what he wants to do, and he gets them across. You know, he's in the same mould as someone maybe like Sam Allardyce, you'd imagine, who was also a tough central defender in his playing days. And, you know, they don't really mince their words. And I think as a team, you see a little bit of that as well. When we saw them play, they were quite a physical side, if you remember rightly.
Yeah.
And they're probably quite forthright like he is. Whereas, you know, perhaps Kit is a little bit more, although he was a central defender as well, he wasn't in that ilk. He was much more of a, you know, a gentle player, I suppose, by comparison. And I think, you know, Kit's trying to get a more gentle style of football across. So I expect to see a robust sort of performance tomorrow. They're going to be quite tough, I think, physically, Ipswich, as well as, you know, their playing style. I think they'll be quite physical, which kind of is a rub-off on Mick McCarthy.
That's a very good point there, David. Over to you, Matt. What are your thoughts about Mick McCarthy?
Well, just like David said, I think that he's definitely fiery and energetic, and you know, he's almost the opposite of Kit Simons in that in a press conference he's always good for a good quote, you know, or a jab every now and again. But you know, I think teams emulate leadership, and their leadership being Mick McCarthy is you know, kind of just shows in the way that they play the game. And so, you know, that's what I would definitely expect, is just what David said, is just physical and then it'd be pretty straightforward. Yeah, he's been great in this division as well. He's a great championship manager, and I think with this level of player, he really gets his point across.
He does. You know, again, they're basically emulating his lead and following his lead. So, again, this is going to be a tough game. It's going to be a physical game, just like you guys are talking about. But I still think the 3 points are there. You know, again, I think it comes down to how badly do Fulham want the 3 points. And before we get into that stuff, David, quickly, give me your thoughts on the ref. You always fill us in on the ref. What have you learned this week?
Well, as soon as I've done this, I'm going to drop off and drop back on.
Okay.
The ref tomorrow is Mark Hayward from West Yorkshire, and he's a regular, and been around a long time. And I couldn't find any dirt to dish on him from quick googling around. So it seems that
that's a good sign.
Yeah, no one. Well, they had a few on Tuesday. I didn't have a problem with the ref on Tuesday though. So I thought he did okay. So you never know. Just because there's nothing doesn't mean he's not going to be bad, but there's nothing. No one seems to have any great concerns about him. It's all a new one for us, getting all these different refs at Craven Cottage. But let's just hope when we do have some of the big matches coming up, the Derby game and everything else, that we do get a good ref on these ones, because it's going to be important that, it's going to be hard enough for us probably anyway, but, we need a ref that's going to be fair and everything. So, Mark Hayward, West Yorkshire, let's see what he's like tomorrow, but no preconceptions, and I'll be back in a sec.
Okay, not a problem, David. All right, Matt, I'm going to head over to you, and I want to find out from you, just in a nutshell, what do Fulham need to do to get all 3 points? Not get a point, win this match. What do they have to do?
Well, I think they've got to defend really well. That's kind of the easy way to put it. I think that they've got to defend well as a unit and not get stretched too early. That's the one thing that worries me. And then going into kind of the formation stuff is that we do get stretched early because our fullbacks get caught too high up the pitch, and which opens up space behind us. And so I think that we've really just got to keep it compact and try to put two halves together. That's the biggest thing is play the game in 15-minute installments and try to put a couple of those together and then see what happens. I'll tell you, it's the one thing that I love about the championship, and I've had so much fun this year, even though the results haven't been great, is that every game we go into, we don't go into any game going, oh, my God, we're going to get smashed here like we did last year or
that's
the year
right.
previous, like, the big club. So, that's why I've had so much fun is that, I think if we do these things that not only can we even get something out of the game, but we can get all 3 points. And so that's what's been so much fun. But I think that we've got to defend well. We've got to deal with their physical play as well. If we can do those things, then we can, 3 points will be right there.
Okay, fantastic. Good stuff. David, over to you.
You hear me okay? Yeah, I'm back. Am I?
I can hear you fine, David.
Good. Sorry, what was the question again? I missed it. Are we doing the formation?
That's okay.
The team now?
What the Fulham need to do to win the match, Matt? If Matt was really discussing basically just play solid defensively to start there.
Well, I mean, again, there really is a pressure on us at home, I think, to make a good fast start. Okay, that didn't help us necessarily last time because, we made a good start, but then we gave it away straight after that. But there is, at the moment, everyone is very, very jittery. I mean, the crowd are very jittery anyway. Obviously, the players are jittery. Their confidence isn't very high. They don't. The last thing they need is the crowd on their back. So it's important that they do make a good start, and therefore the crowd won't be on their back, which will, in turn, not be a vicious circle. So we need to start strong, but we need to stay strong.
Okay, good stuff, David. All right, right back to you, David. Who's the key player in this match? Who needs to have an exceptional match for Fulham to get all 3 points? Last match you had Ross McCormack. Are you going to go back there, or is there someone else?
I don't know. For me, I think we need to be looking more again at... I think we need LVC to step up. He hasn't really done a lot since he's been back from his injury. He's had a few quiet games. I think at home, you really need him driving us forward and putting through balls in for Hugo, whoever's up the front there. So I want to see LVC get back to where he was, because I can't think since he's been back of any sort of outstanding performances by him. And... he is a real, a real key into sort of, when he plays well, we seem to play well as a team as well.
Listen, I totally agree with you, but I could also throw Ross McCormack in there as well. When Ross McCormack plays well, Fulham tend to play well. I think those two players are two very key players. You know, again, when they play well, Fulham seem to play well. Matt, how about you? Who's the key player in this match for Fulham?
I may be biased because of the position that I played, but I think Marcus Bettinelli needs to have a good game tomorrow.
Okay.
You know, he's had kind of a slide where, you know, made a couple of mistakes and things like that, and I think just in terms of getting his confidence back to where it was before, I think it's very important for him to have a nice, clean game. And if he can get away, if he can get out of there with a clean sheet, I think his confidence will go through the roof, and, you know, we can just kind of move forward.
Okay. So for you, it's Marcus Bettinelli. For David, it's LVC. I'm actually going to go with Ross McCormack just to be different. So I'm going to say Ross McCormack because I think he's a key to what Fulham do, especially setting up players up front along with himself. Hopefully he will be playing up front and maybe scoring a goal or two because David knows I always predict Ross McCormack to score. So we'll see there. All right, Matt, but right back to you. Let's now get into the formation and the starting 11. What's your plan? Not Kit's plan. What is Matt Smith's plan?
My plan is to go straight 4-4-2 with wide players, possibly with Cunnicliffe and Kaká out wide. Same back lines we have had, Stathelidis, Bodaroff, Hutchinson, and Grimmer. Bettinelli, obviously, in goal. I'd like to see Parker come back in. Hopefully he can come back. He made the bench against Bolton, and so hopefully he can come back into a starting role. You know, with him and Fofana in the middle, Kaká out wide with a little bit of pace, Cunnicliffe out wide, and then McCormick and Rodiego up front, and really press them a little bit higher up the field. Because like I said before, I think that part of the problem with our defensive shape has been that we've just been getting stretched. And so we've never really played with four in the back because one always gets caught high. So it's almost like we're constantly playing with three in the back. And, you know, I think with another line of four in front of them with wide players, I think that can really, you know, the best, you know, whether we want to call it the best defense is a good attack or whatever, but just defend them higher up the field, compress the space in their defensive half and try to win the ball back there, and then, you know, be able to form counterattacks starting in their half as compared to, you know, having to run 60 yards to create a counterattack.
Okay, very interesting. And Ipswich play a 4-4-2. Let me ask you, just playing back at a 4-4-2, is that a very positive strategy? Just in general,
I think it is. I think it is. I think it keeps your defense. It keeps your defenders more compact because you're not asking Grimmer and Stathelidis to cover 70, 80 yards of space. We're really with the diamond. That's what we're asking them to do: is not only cover the wide players in our defensive third, but also in the neutral third, and even further up the field than that. And so, I think it actually is a very attacking move because it allows you to do things further up the field while still keeping a nice compact defense.
Okay, very good. All right, David, to you. What formation are you going to go with, and what's going to be your starting 11?
I may have been dreaming of my chip buddy then, but I could have sworn Matt has left LVC out. I don't know, is that
he
right,
did.
Matt?
He did.
I actually did make a mistake. I have LVC instead of Fofana. I apologize.
Okay.
Nothing gets past me, Matt. Nothing gets past me at all. Just remember that. Okay. Time to upset or to whatever. Kit, I'll say, Kit, are you ready? Make sure you're listening now, Kit.
Okay.
Same back five as before. I think Hoogland is close enough to coming back that there's no point in changing it again back to Richards, if he is fit, that is. So unless Hoogland is really fit enough to start, and I'm not sure about that, I'd love to see it. But I think we'd have Grimmer at right back, maybe for the last time, unless Hoogland is fit.
Okay.
With the usual rest at the back, with Bettinelli and Hutchinson, Bodaroff and Stathelidis. Midfield,
okay.
Centre of midfield. This is a 4-4-2.
Yep.
Fofana and Parker, centre of midfield. Left midfield, Sean Kavanagh. Right midfield,
wow.
LVC. So
interesting.
I'm going to play with people who are a bit more able to cope and help protect the backs defensively. We've got to shut this line off. I'm certain now we have to shut this line off down the wings. All this giving away corners and crosses, it's been costing us too much. And Kaká, he's okay, but I think on the left, as a, you know, to offer more of a defensive balance, I think Sean Kavanagh might do a better job.
Okay.
And a chance to give him back in. LBC on the right, because he can do that and he will offer protection to Grimmer, but also because LBC can run all over the place anyway. And then I'm going to play, well, basically 4-4-2, but 4-4-1-1. McCormack dropping just a little bit off. Hugo again. I'm going to stick with Hugo because those two do work together. So it's not a cam for McCormack. It is as a striker, but just maybe playing a little bit in the hole there to link up with the others so we don't give up all our midfield strength. So I'm leaving Kaká out and I'm leaving Tiny Cliff out from Tuesday.
Okay, so you're having Parker and Fofana in the middle?
Yeah, because I think Parker can be more of the defensive one and Fofana more of the attacking one. Although they're
this is almost going back to Roy Hodgson days, David.
Well, a little bit, but I've just been trying to think about what we could do with the players we've got without completely making ourselves weak in the middle, but trying to, you know, these wings, it's been really bugging me this down the wings, how we're just getting attacked down the wings all the time and the fullbacks.
I like the Sean Kavanagh move. I got to be honest with you. I like that if he's fit to play. We haven't really heard if he's fit yet, but if he's fit to play, he's a player that I think could really offer something and can also offer, like you mentioned, David, defensive help. So I like that move.
Yeah, and he's shown he's got a good left foot there as well. And it may be a bit harsh on Kaká. If Kavanagh's not fit to play, then Kaká can slot in there, but he doesn't offer quite as much defensively. And I think
so you guys are both going 4-4-2. I like it. I like that we're kind of ditching the diamond right now and we're going back to 4-4-2. Are you listening, Kit? Are you listening to us? Let's go 4-4-2. Definitely let's go 4-4-2. I like it, guys. I like your approach. I like, Matt, I love your explanation. And, David, I really like your inclusion of Sean Kavanagh. I've been thinking about that lately. So, again, if he's fit to play, I would totally like to see that. And I know that Kit likes him as a player. And I think that gives that defensive cover that I think they're missing. And I think he has that I think he has that great cross, too. I think he has that ability, David, that he could really be a weapon, you know, on the left side of the midfield. So I like that move. I do. I like that move. Wow, very interesting, guys. Okay, believe it or not, we only have 2 minutes left. So quickly we have to go to predictions. So unfortunately I'm not going to be able to share the predictions of the Fulham supporters. But, David, I'll go to you first. Give me your prediction.
I'm going to go again 1-1 because I think Ipswich are good enough to take the game to us, but I hope not.
Okay, 1-1. Okay, Matt, to you.
Very boring. I completely agree. 1-1 is my prediction.
Okay. All right. Guys, I have to go for a victory. I'm going 2-1. Two goals from Ross McCormack, David. Have to do it. I have to be consistent, David. I'm consistently idiotic. Two goals from Ross McCormack. All right. All right, guys, we only have about 90 seconds left. I do want to mention this. David, I want you to check your program tomorrow. Because Cotta Talk is going to be in the program. I just want to mention that. So go to the fan section of your program, and we are going to be getting a mention in the match day program. So check that out, David. Let me know how it looks.
Okay. No worries.
Okay. And Matt, as always, please come back soon, my friend.
Oh, it's been great, great to be back. I'll definitely be back soon.
Okay. And please say hi to Heather for me.
Absolutely.
All right, guys, let's wrap up this show. Before we go, just a reminder, you can download Cotta Talk on iTunes and on the Stitcher Radio app, which is available on the iPhone, iPad, and the Android. Also, you can listen to Cotta Talk on the TuneIn app, which is available at most app stores for your mobile device. Well, that's it for this show. For David Holly and Matt Smith, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you again for listening to Cotta Talk. Cheers, guys.
Cheers, Russ. Cheers, Matt. All right. See you soon, hopefully.
Hey. Yeah,
definitely cheer, guys. The faraway town, now war is declared, and battle comes down. London calling to the underworld. Come out of the cupboard, you boys.